Good to see early on, mate. There was a bit of footage of the Dennis Rodman and Chris Anstey scuffle when it was Chicago at Dallas from the 1998 season. Just a couple of seconds there of Australia's own Chris Anstey mixing it up with the Worm.
Jason Hare also mentioned that in organising Dennis to sit down for this interview, that Dennis rolled up 2 to 3 hours late for the meeting with Hare. And on hearing what the documentary series was going to be about, Dennis told Jason that, "I'll give you 10 minutes. Jason Hare said he soiled himself, but then Dennis then sat down for 3 hours with him.
That's fantastic.
Great little story.
Then you are in Australia right now.
You're talking NBA basketball. You're talking great teams. You're talking great individual players.
Takes it off and there's number 23. And of course, Johnny goes nuts.
So we're all getting goosebumps thinking about it now.
I just tried to go out there and play my game.
I have no idea what you're talking about, Adam. I don't like anybody. I'm not a people person.
Grant, you made the pass. Yes. Christian, can you catch the ball? Yes.
All the stars were aligned and all the muscles fired at the right time. And I was able to get off the ground and throw one down.
I was saving that as a surprise for you.
And now, introducing your host for In All Airness, Adam Ryan.
Welcome to episode 103. Thanks for joining me. My regular co-host and great mate, Aaron Steen, joins me to recap episode 3 of the Last Dance docuseries. Continue to keep an eye on my podcast feed. More special episodes devoted to The Last Dance are coming your way. Towards the end of this episode, I'll share another great podcast review. If you can spare a moment or two, please add your review via your listening app. It would be most appreciated. Show notes for this episode and access to a huge archive of past episodes are available at inallairness.com. Now, onto the show. Welcome to our episode 3 recap, Aaron, of The Last Dance, breaking down the 10-part ESPN Netflix documentary, mate. How are you today? And thanks for being a part of the show.
Head forward from down southeast Oklahoma State, Dennis Rodman.
Hello to Ray Clay if you're listening. If you're new to the show, welcome. If you're a regular listener, welcome back.
Jason Hare said on ESPN Chicago with Waddle and Sylvie, in speaking about the ratings in between episode 1 and 2, that a normally accepted drop-off in ratings in between episodes 1 and 2 of a documentary series, it's about a 20% drop. That's what's accepted. Jason said that there was only a 1% drop-off in viewership in between episodes 1 and 2. So he was very happy about that.
The episode begins with Dennis Rodman. We see him working out back in his NBA playing days. Current day Rodman talks about his work ethic. He also goes on to say that he doesn't think the Bulls would win the 3 titles without him, which is a very fair point, of course, and that sort of gets emphasized as this episode goes on. Good to see early on, mate. There was a bit of footage of the Dennis Rodman and Chris Anstey scuffle when it was Chicago at Dallas from the 1998 season. Just a couple of seconds there of Australia's own Chris Anstey mixing it up with the Worm.
Yeah, the aforementioned Jason Hare also mentioned that in organising Dennis to sit down for this interview, that Dennis rolled up 2 to 3 hours late for the meeting with Hare. And on hearing what the documentary series was going to be about, Dennis told Jason that, "I'll give you 10 minutes. Jason Hare said he soiled himself, but then Dennis then sat down for 3 hours with him.
That's fantastic.
Great little story.
Those couple of tidbits there and a few others you might contribute, courtesy of Waddle and Sylvie in Chicago. You're a regular listener of those guys?
ESPN 1000.
Early on in the episode as well, we see Steve Cashel, friend of the show, who appeared in the first extras episode. Check the podcast feed for more details about that. He's our front and center in a scrum of media trying to get access to MJ as Jordan answers more questions about Scottie Pippen and whether Pippen will play. And later in the episode, we also have countless questions that are asked of Jordan about what his plans are post-1998 as well. I've got a little note here just to make mention of, mate. Tough decisions to make re-editing as far as putting in more pre-game footage versus actual game footage from the 1998 season. It's really an incredibly tough balancing act that Jason Hare must have had to go through in order to sort of see what did make the cut versus what eventually just ended up on the cutting room floor.
Yeah, he actually mentioned to Waddle and Sylvie, probably the biggest challenge that he had was keeping each of the episodes to 50 minutes. It wasn't so much, it was an issue with time as he is editing the episodes, actually, as we speak, episodes 9 and 10, he said that the biggest obstacle for him has been trying to squeeze everything into a 50-minute episode.
We see present-day Jordan talking about how he wanted Rodman to be more accountable in the absence of Scottie Pippen. Pip sits out the first 35 games of the 1998 campaign, and this is really about how important Dennis was to the team overall, but particularly during the absence of Scottie Pippen. So it was really good in that respect.
And it was at about this time that we got story time with Michael again, with him explaining the night that Dennis came to his hotel room. I guess he's realized at this point what Michael needs from him, and it was after this point that Dennis was really locked in.
Yes, and then we see a bit of game footage from December 9, 97 versus the Knicks. The Bulls were 12-7 at the time, and then we also see they cut to the 20th of December 1997 at New Jersey. Iron Eagle, we get to hear his voice briefly, great friend of the show, two-time guest, and the Bulls are 16-9 at that stage. Good to see some other footage from that Christmas Day game in 1997 versus Miami.
Yeah.
Where Rodman had that classic save as he fell out of bounds and kept the ball in play to, I think, Steve Kerr, who caught the ball and then hit the jump shot. Rodman was 37 years of age when we're talking about the 1998 season, by the time all was said and done. Quite staggering. And the other thing that I think that gets overlooked is that as a rookie, Rodman is 25 years old. Not many people actually make mention of the fact that he was that old when he entered the league.
His rookie season was the season before Scotty came into the league, and there was a few seasons after MJ started, yet he was older than both of them.
True. Now, we also get to see Rodman's history as far as when he grew up. We go back in time from December of 97 back to 1970. Dennis talks about his upbringing, how he managed to avoid drugs by playing basketball, exercising, doing workouts and whatnot. And then we get to see some highlights of him from Southeast Oklahoma State, as you so beautifully introduced when we started this episode. I should have cross-referenced this, but Rodman says he averaged 27 points and 14 boards per game. We see Isaiah Thomas talking about a young-ish Dennis Rodman in the first year or two of being in the league. Just naive to the world, I think, was what Isaiah described him as being. What have you made about Isaiah Thomas's appearances thus far in terms of what he said present day?
Isaiah's contribution to the episodes has been really good. I thoroughly enjoyed hearing from Zeke. Some of the content from him across the series, though, I've found a bit questionable. He seems to have a real woe-is-me kind of attitude at times when it comes to how he's been treated with things such as the Dream Team and whatnot. But when he's talking about those Pistons teams of the late 80s, yeah, and the innocent country boy Dennis Rodman who walked in with his T-shirt tucked into his jeans, that stuff's been really good.
Yeah, I think he's had some great contributions in parts, revisionist history or trying to placate others in other parts. It'll be interesting to see what happens in the final sort of five or six episodes that we get to see here as to how much more we hear from Thomas on certain things that happened over the years. I think one of the great clips of the episode is where we see Dennis present day talking about his rebounding ability and how he managed to learn where different players' shots would miss, and then they show a quick montage of him doing all kinds of reactions and motions.
Yeah, I've specifically made a note that sequence of him explaining his rebounding reactions was amazing. And Jason Hare said that he basically left that to his editor, who put that sequence together for him over a weekend. And Jason's walked back in, seen the sequence, and just gone, that is absolutely perfect.
Major kudos to whoever that editor was. Then we get another great quote. There's been lots of great just single quotes that have come from this series already. One of them this time from Gary Payton, who talks about Rodman being the F-up person. He just Fs everything up. We'll keep it G-rated, but I thought that was fantastic to have him just come in and start his appearance off by just throwing that straight out there as well. We also get to hear from Brendan Malone, assistant coach on the Pistons there, talking about the strong relationship between the Worm and Chuck Daly. Also, I'm surprised they actually didn't show maybe a few more seconds of the clip of Daly and Rodman when Chuck's talking about how proud he is of Dennis, because I'm pretty sure that's right around when he won his Defensive Player of the Year nod.
Yeah.
At the microphone, Rodman is crying. They didn't actually show that in the clip. I would have thought that would have been probably worth having a few extra seconds just to add a bit more extra context, but I suppose they can't show everything as we've been talking about.
Yeah, it would have been a good addition because they speak about Chuck Daly and Phil Jackson being father figures to Dennis, who grew up without his dad. I'm stating the bleeding obvious when I say this, but Dennis was such a truly unique physical specimen. You look at his long, gangly arms when he was younger, and then as he filled out and became a more mature man, like his ability to guard Shaquille O'Neal in the post as a 6'6", 210-pound, in inverted commas, power forward at that size, guarding Shaq at 7 feet, 300 pounds. It's one of the most extraordinary things I've ever seen on an NBA court.
Incredibly unique. Another great quote from this episode comes via Brendan Malone, who, when discussing Chuck Daly, Chuck told him, quote, "You don't put a saddle on a Mustang," which I thought was just an awesome comment to make. We also hear from Rod Thorne, who talks about the 1988 Detroit Pistons. And then we see a montage of clips where the Bad Boys are basically beating up on guys, including Dominic Wilkins, Doc Rivers, Terry Porter, Brad Lowhouse, AC Green, Brad Doherty, Larry Bird, just to name some, all getting roughed up by the Bad Boys, which, again, is just some fantastic clips, not probably for the guys getting beat up on, but the accompanying music I'm actually growing more and more fond of as the series is going on. Initially, I wasn't overly fussed. I really am enjoying it more and more as each episode progresses.
I'll keep mentioning his name, but Jason Hare said that he was very proud of the music selections after this section in episode 3 about Dennis. It moves on to the 1980s Bulls and I guess the Doug Collins era and MJ's 1987-88 season, where Doug Collins says that he wins the MVPs for the All-Star game and regular season and Defensive Player of the Year, Dunk Champ, and you know, he really became probably the best player in the NBA. And the music selection of Prince's New King in Town during that clip was perfect.
Each time I watch it, I'm growing more and more fond of the music that accompanies the clips.
There's some great detail given by Brendan Malone on what the Jordan rules actually entailed, including putting him on his backside if he goes baseline. Dennis Rodman commented on Jordan's ability to maintain his greatness despite the beating that they gave him, which I thought was a cool comment from Dennis. The NBA wanting to elevate Jordan, you know, they wanted to make it Bird, then Magic, then Jordan. And then the author, Todd Boyd, adds in the phrase, "Are you willing to risk injury in order to score a basket?" That's how hard that the Pistons played Jordan during that season.
Now, this footage that you're talking about from this 87-88 season, there's some great stuff that's shown from two documentaries that were produced by a lady named Jeannie Morris. One documentary was called Michael Jordan from 1987, and the other one's called Jordan and Co. from the 1988 season. And select clips from both those documentaries obviously appear in this episode, but also they appear in the Chicago Bulls Higher Ground season recap NBA Entertainment released circa 1988 as well. We also learn a few of the parallels between Doug Collins and Jordan in terms of their competitive nature.
Some of the details around the hire of Doug Collins as head coach of the Bulls were a little contentious, as we spoke about, Adam, in our NB86 series. It was in March of 1986 that Jerry Krause hired Doug Collins as, I guess, an advanced scout to scout upcoming Bulls opponents. This is the guy who would eventually become the head coach of the Bulls just a few months later. So Krause had Collins in the building and Stan Allback's body wasn't even cold yet.
Yeah, you're right. Eerily similar to what would happen years later as well with the introduction of Tim Floyd already just sitting at Bulls games openly with Jerry Krause years ahead of his eventual replacement of the Zen master Phil Jackson. So, yeah, quite eerie looking back on that.
Hello to Doug, if you're listening. Doug Collins is apparently recovering from back surgery in Arizona at the moment, Adam.
Mm. Hello, Doug, if you are listening. And, yeah, wishing you a speedy recovery. Then we get to see the 1989 Eastern Conference first round, the famed series against Cleveland, culminating with the shot in Game 5. Sam Smith talks about how Jordan was picking off each Chicago rider who doubted them in that series. He was talking about Lacy Banks, who said they'd get swept. He talked about Kent McDill, who said they'd lose in 4. And then he also pointed out Sam Smith saying that they'd lose in 5. So he was going to take care of each of those guys, respectively, as the series went on.
Yeah.
Of course, we see the shot, and the inverted commas new footage of Jordan and the Bulls from that baseline vantage point. In effect, that's been out for years and it was online for years. It was uploaded by the cameraman and reported themselves. But good to see that footage nonetheless with Jerry Krause and Jerry Reinsdorf up in the seats at Richfield Coliseum as well, looking on at the proceedings.
And future Chicago Bull Rod Harper apparently has rewritten some history during the airing of the series. He mentions in episode 3 that he told Coach Lenny Wilkins that he wanted MJ on that last play. And when Lenny Wilkins told him that he was going to put ELO on him, he expressed his disappointment. I won't say what Harp actually said in the episode because this is a PG episode. But it's funny, Lenny Wilkins and Craig ELO have both been on sports radio in the last couple of weeks and neither of them have any memory of Harp making that request to play Jordan on the last play.
Made for a great quote, no doubt. Doug says something along the lines of that shot let the Bulls know that something special was on the horizon. They cut straight from there to the 89 Eastern Conference Finals, so we don't even get to see 1 second of the matchup against the Knicks in the second round.
Jordan mentions that the Bulls were kind of known as a losing franchise. Winning game one in the Eastern Conference Finals must have had the Bulls feeling absolutely sky high, and then to also win game three at home on that amazing shot by MJ to go from not being known as a successful franchise and then to all of a sudden be in the Eastern Conference Finals and be 2-1 up. The entire city of Chicago must have been really excited about it.
That's where Doug Collins comes out with his classic quote as well. After Jordan's game winner in game three there, they win 99-97. He just says, basically, I just said, get the ball to Michael, everybody else get the F out of the way. So that's where that quote actually originates from, but it's often confused for the shot in Cleveland because it's been edited to show it that way in the past through various media outlets. I did notice briefly they did show footage of Jordan hitting his head on a player's knee for the Pistons and then collapsing to the ground. That happened in game one of the 1990 Eastern Conference Finals. It's put into the clips of the 1989 series as if it took place during that series. I know I'm nitpicking.
Yeah, it's not the only time during the series that they've spliced bits of video and audio as well, I guess, from other seasons and other series and regular season games and whatnot. So I guess anything just to get the production together.
They've got to tell a story, so I understand it needs to be done in certain circumstances. So obviously the Pistons go on to upend the Bulls and eventually win the 1989 NBA championship. We see them celebrating there. The clip fast forwards to February of 1993, where we see Dennis Rodman, who had been found in a car park at the Palace of Auburn Hills with his registered rifle in the car. Pretty much a despondent Dennis Rodman at that stage. And then we learn more about his final moments as a Detroit Piston player before the trade to San Antonio for Sean Elliott and David Wood. Once we see Dennis in San Antonio, we then hear file footage of Jerry Krause where he's mentioning how he discussed with assistant GM at the time, Jim Stack, how Jim Stack was really high on the fact that Rodman could be a great player with the Bulls just because of the makeup of the Bulls team. Having Scotty and Michael, that would definitely be a calming influence on Dennis and they could certainly get the most out of him. And then we also hear about Phil Jackson's first meeting with the Worm, which was far from a glorious start.
Dennis talks about his importance to this Bulls team and they probably wouldn't have won those three championships without him. If you look at the makeups of the 94-95 Bulls and the 95-96 Bulls, there's only one major change in between the seasons, isn't there?
Rodman.
It's Dennis. Like when Dennis was first moved from Detroit to San Antonio, he had his problems, but that was peak rebounding Dennis Rodman. That was 18 rebounds a game, Dennis Rodman. He had his problems, but his productivity was outstanding.
Another great quote comes in this episode when Scottie Pippen is asked the following question, how did Dennis fit in when he first arrived to the Bulls? Pip comes out with like a hand in a glove. Another great comment. This series is littered with just fantastic one-liners. We get to see a few new players appear in terms of present day, talking about this era. That includes Judd Bushler, which is very good. Mr. Bill Cartwright, gets some airtime. The episode then forwards to January of 1998, and the Bulls are atop the Eastern Conference at 24-11, and there's more speculation again about Jordan's plans post-1998 season. We get a brief side note where Bulls equipment manager John Ligmanowski introduces us to the inverted commas Sniff Brothers, which was a nice little whimsical aside, I guess. More on that in future episodes, no doubt.
In regards to MJ's future, he was having a discussion with a couple of the local Chicago media guys regarding being sick of that line of questioning. And he added that it wasn't the home guys because they knew how to deal with him, that it was on the road that was killing him because all of the reporters in other cities, I guess, didn't understand how much it was driving him nuts.
We then crossed to January the 10th of 1998, where there's a SportsCenter report talking about the fact that Scotty had softened his demands to be traded from the Bulls. And we go inside Pippen's hotel room where he's talking about his change of mind as he's set to come back from his 35-game absence in a home game against the Golden State Warriors.
It was during this section about Scotty's return that it was explained how much Dennis enjoyed the two-man show that he had going with Michael. You see an interaction between the two on the bench in New York, and MJ's explaining to Dennis what he wants on screens regarding Allen Houston and Charles Oakley. And you can see that Dennis is completely engaged and locked into what MJ is saying to him, and he's responding to him as such as well. The return of Scotty in January apparently really affected Dennis's concentration greatly because he enjoyed the two-man show that he had going with Michael.
He did, and then we get to hear from Steve Kerr, who talked about Rodman having different needs versus most others on the Bulls roster in terms of his personal life, and Jordan saying how much of a model citizen Rodman was whilst Pippen was out. And that leads to one of the great parts of the series thus far, where we get to see Phil Jackson, Scottie Pippen, and Dennis Rodman reacting to Jordan, talking about the soon-to-be vacation that Rodman has in Las Vegas. They're all looking at iPhones, watching Jordan talk about it, and their individual reactions as that is unfolding is another masterclass of editing.
Absolutely priceless. And Jason Hare said that the idea for handing people that he was interviewing an iPad, you know, to get a raw reaction on somebody else's words, he got the idea from one of his first meetings with MJ, where he showed Jordan a YouTube clip of Jordan's fights that he had in NBA games. He handed the phone to Jordan and he saw Jordan's demeanor change immediately. That's where he got the idea to do the same thing in this series.
It's a stroke of genius. So the episode wraps up where Dennis hops on a motorbike after downing a can of Miller Lite, setting off into the darkness for the next 48 hours or more that lay ahead in Las Vegas. I think we've covered most of the people that appeared in the episode. If I hadn't already mentioned, there was David Aldridge, Brian McIntyre, Dr. Todd Boyd made a few cameos. Most other ones have been mentioned as we've discussed the episode. Thanks again, Aaron, for being a part of the show, mate. Until we meet on the dance floor again, any last thoughts?
I think I've covered off all of the notes that I've got written down. I just wanted to end the episode with, kids don't drink and ride. Giddy up.
Thanks for listening. I welcome your interaction with the show. You can suggest topics or guests you want to hear conversations with. Send me an email. Audio clips are welcome. inallairness@gmail.com. Time to share another great review from a fan of the show. Thanks to 12 Wax. I definitely know that's not his real name. Via Apple Podcasts Australia. It's titled Excellent and it reads, I'm loving this pod. Great knowledge, guests and attention to details from Adam. He's truly passionate about what he does and it shows in what he puts out. Thank you, 12 Wax, aka Lucas Walker. I appreciate the 5-star rating too, mate. You're a good man. Worldwide, the show now has 144 ratings on Apple Podcasts with an average of 4.5 stars, with 86 reviews across all providers. Thanks for your continued support. If you add a review, I'd love to read it out on a future episode. Your ratings and reviews are one of the best ways to support the podcast. If you enjoy the show, please tell your basketball-loving friends about it. Your word-of-mouth recommendations are worth their weight in gold. Stay up to date with my podcast and subscribe to my monthly email newsletter. You'll receive exclusive details on upcoming podcast episodes, future high-profile guests to appear on the show, and more. Simply email me inallairness@gmail.com. You can subscribe to my show in various ways. Search for In All Airness, 3 words, on your podcast app of choice. The show is on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Overcast, Android, and more. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the show and share my web address with your friends and colleagues. inallairness.com. Check out the podcast archive for plenty more episodes with high-profile guests. Follow me on Twitter at InAllAnus. Please add your like to the show's social hub, facebook.com/InAllAnus. Join me next time for another edition of the show.